cue the fancy intro music. I'm Lisa Robin Young, and this is Creative Freedom, empowerment for creative entrepreneurs, where can-do inspiration and how-to education collide to help you own your dreams without selling your soul. Creative Freedom helps you to find success on your own terms and build a profitable, sustainable business doing what you love. So whether you watch the web series, the live Q&A, or are just joining us through the podcast, welcome. I'm excited you're here. Forbes just released the 2018 list of America's richest self-made women. And while I get where they're coming from with the title, the reality is that no one is self-made. Not really. If you look at the term in the purest sense, it's impossible to become a millionaire or billionaire all by yourself. You gotta have customers, right? On the other hand, if you look at the broad use of the term to become successful through your own efforts, then nearly everyone who's ever lifted a pencil is self-made. So to me, that word has no valuable meaning. All of us need someone else to become successful. Unless your definition of success is to do, be, and have everything entirely on your own, which is a lonely life to live, and you probably wouldn't be listening to this episode anyways. Now, there's no doubt that some of these women are a bit more self-reliant or self-sufficient than others. I think there's value in that word, self-reliant, to be able to handle some things on our own. There's a lot we can do on our own or through our own gumption. Some of them, like Oprah, who holds the number 6 spot, started with little more than her education and her determination, while others relied on success with their spouses to build their wealth. Regardless, though, the whole idea of being self-made is a joke to me. None of us comes from absolutely nothing. We didn't just appear out of thin air. We all have resources and support of some kind. Maybe some of us have fewer resources than others, but someone had to take a chance on us and give us that leg up. If it can happen for these women, it could happen for you too. But you gotta stop trying to do it all by yourself. As a fusing creative, I am a recovering DIYer. DIY, do it all yourself. As a poor college student, quote unquote, I learned graphic design so that I could design my album covers. I took business law courses so I could read and draft a basic contract. I took my music classes, of course, so that I could sing and play all the parts on my albums because, as a quote unquote poor college student, I was broke and couldn't afford to pay anyone to work on my projects. And my mom always taught me that, you know, nothing is free. You got to pay for everything, right? Well, we've reached the end of our summer series on under-earning, and I've saved one of the most critical topics for last, your circle of support. Both your people type support as well as your environment of support, which we'll talk about later in the episode. Like I said, I'm a fusion creative. We really struggle with asking for and receiving help, mostly because we can do so many things ourselves that there's some level of guilt or shame that comes around asking for help. It's also because we haven't always done the work to build the network to the point where we feel comfortable asking for help, which is what happens when you do everything yourself. You become an island of sorts, and people sail by you while you're standing there doing all the things. At first, it's no big deal because you're pretty quick and you've got a breadth of knowledge that helps you get things done. But eventually, and for me, this was years into my business, it becomes obvious that you can't do everything yourself, even if you know how. Yes, you might be faster at some things, but as I've mentioned before, if you're doing all the things, you can't free yourself up to do the stuff that matters to you. You have to let go and turn some of those things over to people that you can trust. Now, linears don't usually have this problem. They are master delegators because they are master systems creators. They can systematize almost everything, hire someone else to get it done, and go with a smile. It's one of the reasons linears often hit their financial goals faster than the other creative types. Chaotics aren't natural delegators because of their high expectations for excellence. They know they need to delegate. They know they need to ask for help, but they have a hard time turning something over without micromanaging the details of the project. That can be incredibly frustrating for someone who's trying to help you, even if you're paying them. Just trust me to do my job. That's what you hired me for. Each of the types has their own bottlenecks around support. And if you're not aware of your creative entrepreneur type, you'll want to hop over to my website and take the free assessment. It will help you get clarity on a multitude of ninja skills and blind spots that are unique to each type. So for years, I was a Lone Ranger trying to do everything myself until I met the crazy lady on the airplane that inspired me to write The Secret Watch. She told me the book would be a bestseller, and I tend to take those kinds of divine encounters seriously. So I wanted to create something bestseller worthy. I had written workbooks before, but I didn't really know anything about writing a book. So I did what any fusion creative would do. I started researching. I looked at books I loved and explored their covers, interior layouts, and made note of what worked and what I didn't particularly care for. I also noticed that the acknowledgments almost always mentioned an editor. So when I launched The Secret Watch, I took my first step in trusting someone else with my work, and I hired an editor. She gave me a glimpse into what it means to create something bigger than yourself. I hired a cover designer for that book too. It was hard to ask for help. Even when I was paying people for that help, I'd never really done it before. And then when things didn't flow on my timeline, I was all, see, I should have just done this myself. Wah! But the end result was an international bestseller that still sells copies on Amazon. Long after many books leave the global consciousness, people are still buying The Secret Watch. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I had the right kind of help for where I was at when I wrote that book. I couldn't keep doing everything myself. I'd written a couple of workbooks for the direct sales crowd, and they looked okay. But I wanted a book that would stand the test of time. Something I knew I didn't have the skills to do entirely on my own, or the time to figure out how to do on my own. And I didn't have a huge budget, but I knew that I could at least start doing the research to find out what it would take to get this book to publisher quality, even if I self-published it. Now, I had built a relationship with a woman that I didn't even know was an editor. She was an author, and she traveled in some of the same direct sales circles that I did. I had a friend who was a graphic designer who had started to do some book cover work, so I reached out to her. I got a budget. And then I started saving and working on the book in the meantime. I did what I had to do to finally get that book to press. Now, with Creative Freedom, I already had the experience of working with a team, so I had some better expectations around how long it would take and all that kind of stuff. I also knew that I wanted a book that would get used. I wanted something somewhere between a how-to guide and a workbook. Something that was sticky for readers to come back to regularly. So I tabbed Tracy Lay over at digivisualdesign.com. She's essentially my brand guardian. I trust her with all my big design projects now. She did the cover for the book, the interior design for Creative Freedom. That was something I didn't even think about for The Secret Watch. Now, I had no idea it was even something to think about, to be honest with you. Tracy opened my eyes to a whole lot of things about making a book look good beyond a great cover. Great covers are important, but the interior is important too because you want the book to get read. The cover gets people to open the book, to buy the book and open it. A good interior design gets people thumbing through it, reading it, engaging with it, and that was what I wanted. But I didn't know that until I started working with Tracy. She's also done some of my document templates, and she's working with me to develop our new website. And I know I can count on Tracy's team to do great work. When you get the right people on the bus, you can trust them to do their part so that you can do yours. My VA Jeannie is another indispensable part of my team. My clients trust her. I adore her. I love you, Jeannie. She makes my job easier in a lot of ways. And she handles things when I'm not around. Stuff gets done. And I can count on her to do her best. Now, these folks are part of my support network. But it didn't happen magically or overnight. I'd known Tracy and Jeannie for years before we started working together. I had plenty of support team horror stories before I met them, too. I had a few wins, too. My first and only employee, I called her my Bonnie. Her name is Bonnie. She was amazing. She was dedicated, focused, committed to what I was doing with the company. You know, and support comes in many different forms. I've hired house cleaners, bookkeepers. I had a couple of nannies who were incredible to my youngest, too. As Jim Collins pointed out in his book, Good to Great, you gotta get the right people on the bus. Now, that doesn't mean you need a jillion people on your bus, just the right ones. And then it doesn't matter where you need to go, those people are going to help you get there. Barbara Hewson, formerly Barbara Stanny, wrote the book Overcoming Under-Earning. And in it, she talks about the different types of personal support you need in your world if you're going to have peace of mind and financial success. Now, this is less about job descriptions and more about roles that need to be filled in order for you to feel fulfilled. Hewson says, quote, under-earners tend to operate in isolation or surround themselves with naysayers, negative people, pessimists, and worrywarts. High earners always surround themselves with people who cheer them on, end quote. Here are the four kinds of people that Hewson says you need in your circle, regardless of how introverted you are, guys, all right? I know some of y'all are introverts. You need people. Let's break this down. Number one, true believers or cheerleaders. One of the reasons I enjoy Adam Sandler movies is that I like to see what Rob Schneider is going to do. He's in just about every Adam Sandler movie because Rob's one of Sandler's best friends. Your true believers or cheerleaders are the folks who see your potential, even if you can't right now. And I often fill this role for my clients. And sometimes they do it for me. These are the Rob Schneiders of your life. They're the ones telling you, you can do it. My Bonnie was that kind of person. She was always trying to help me see how we can make something happen. She was a real cheerleader. Next, we have confidants. These are the folks you can talk to about whatever's going on. You can be emotionally intimate with them. They provide a judgment-free zone for you to process what's going on for you. We typically give these people a lot of trust and influence in our decision-making process. So this could be a therapist, a counselor, clergy, close friend or family member. These folks are the ones who say, I understand, I see you, and hold that space for you to step into your greatness. My former coach and good friend, Teresa, is one of those people for me. I could tell her just about anything, and I knew there was no judgment. In fact, she was the one who taught me about the power of the judgment-free zone. She called it Awajawa, awareness without judgment, awareness with acceptance. I call it ruthless honesty, but it's essentially the same thing, letting the judgment drop so you can see what's what and take informed action. Now, number three, role models. These folks light the path for you. They show the way, the how, and can often help you cut your learning curve. You may or may not know them personally, but they provide light and inspiration to help you on your journey. Just remember, because no one is perfect, your role model won't be perfect either. That doesn't make what you learn from them any less valuable. We are all on an imperfect journey. Keep that in mind as you look to your role models for support, encouragement, and inspiration. I learned this in a very personal way when I worked with one of my role models. I've admired many different authors for years, and sometimes I get to meet them or work with them as they launch their books into the world. One such author, whose work I admired greatly, turned out to be a less than fantastic, somewhat arrogant person when I met them. While it diminished my view of the author as a person, as a human being, it didn't diminish the value I got from the books I'd read. Their work taught me a lot and helped me do a lot of good in the world. So we have to be willing to take the good with the bad in that case. Now, that doesn't mean you should absolve a person of their poor behavior just because they're great at something else. It just means that you can value what you get out of their work separate from the person delivering that work. And lastly, we have messengers. Now, Hewson says that these people are often transient in our lives. They may only pass through for a season of your life or intermittently through your life. These are the folks who can help you, either through a referral, a connection, an idea, or through some other means that might not have happened had you not met them. I'm lucky that one of my messengers is also my friend. Matt is a friend that I see occasionally. We met doing community theater together, and while we've become friends, we maybe see each other a couple of times a year if we're lucky. But Matt was a catalyst that ended up making the incubator happen. So if you're not familiar, the Creative Freedom Incubator is a hybrid mix of coaching and hands-on help for creative entrepreneurs. I actually go into their business and work with the owner. My team and I help grow it in a way that helps it become a profitable, sustainable venture for the creative entrepreneur. We basically provide training wheels to help the owner become more of a CEO and practice making key decisions with a safety net. We help them learn how to delegate. We do almost anything. And I help coach them around their blocks to help them become more confident as business owners and really take ownership of their greatness. But the incubator never would have happened if Matt hadn't showed up on my doorstep one day with a problem. He was trying to get his language education business going, and he just didn't have the hands or the time to do all the things anymore. So I developed a proposal for a profit-sharing model that allowed me to do a portion of the work inside his business for a portion of the profits once the business started growing. The next day, he got a pink slip at his day job, and he never signed the contract. But he triggered a series of events that led me to Nashville and creating this amazing program that's helped creative entrepreneurs double and triple their revenue, as well as increase their time off. And the demand was so strong that I built out portable coaching and AA Club as additional ways to get support at different price points that didn't require profit sharing. In less than 2 years, we've helped dozens of creatives make more money doing what they love and enjoy their lives in the process. That was a huge message for me that impacted lives all over the world. And I'm glad Matt and I are still friends to boot. So, cheerleader, confidant, role model, or messenger, you're going to need each of these kinds of people in your journey. Sometimes one person will fill several of these roles, and sometimes not. What matters is that you have these folks in your corner. And that's why I don't believe in the self-made myth. You've got to expand your support universe. Even the most introverted among us needs support and help at different points on the journey of creative entrepreneurship. It pays to expand your support network in ways that work for you and to do it sooner rather than later, that whole dig your well before you're thirsty concept. So who are these people in your world? Are you making that mental list of folks in your head right now? Are you seeing some gaps? Maybe you don't have any cheerleaders and you feel like you've got no one to confide in. That's a tough spot to be in. I was that way for a while. I lost count, oh my gosh, of the number of times my family would ask me when I was going to get a real job, or my then husband asked me what I was doing all day long. It was hard to work in such an unsupportive environment. In most cases, I knew they were just trying to be supportive in their own way. They wanted me to be happy. And because they were afraid of what it meant to work for themselves, they projected that fear my way. They also saw my mom struggle for years as an on-again, off-again entrepreneur, so they held that story in their minds as well. Now, I spent a year as a financial advisor, and one of the things I learned in my licensing exams is something I try to remind all my clients and even my family from time to time. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Simply put, you can't control the outcome. All you can do is influence it with your actions. If you take the same actions often enough, sometimes you can predict an outcome, but not always. There's always that freak of nature thing that happens that could change the outcome. You just don't know. So if I'm going to be doing something in this world, I might as well be focused on doing what's important to me, what matters to me, and what I believe can make a positive impact on the world. For me, and for many creative entrepreneurs, that's not going to happen working a regular, quote-unquote, real job kind of job. So you need to look for people who get that. People who either have a similar mindset because they're on a similar journey, or people who can hold that space for you and know that you're capable. I was lucky in school. I had some teachers who believed in my skills and abilities. They saw talent that other people waved off or scoffed at. My junior high English, band, and science teachers all had a tremendous impact on my belief in my skill set. My high school choir teacher, drama teacher, and my college music theory instructors, and a couple of teachers that I had in summer programs, they all believed in the talent they saw, and they did what they could to help nurture it. They said, "I see you. I believe in you. You can do this." At a time when my own family, my own flesh and blood, the people you expect to be in your corner, just couldn't shake their own fear and their need for stability to be that encouraging voice for me. Now, I've hired coaches, therapists, and trainers at different stages of my life for different issues, all of which required a different level of intimacy and trust. Most of the time, my trust was well placed and my life was unequivocally improved because of the work I was able to do inside that circle of trust. Only once did I deeply regret making the investment to work with someone, and I wrote about that in my book, so we won't go there now. The point is, sometimes when those people don't show up organically in your life, when you don't have the good fortune of having those relationships personally, it's worth it to make the investment. And when I wasn't able to make the investment, because, you know, we don't all start out with money, right? When I wasn't able to make the investment, I practically lived at the library. My role models were found in the books I was reading, the learning I was absorbing. I used to joke that I was the Dread Pirate Roberts. If you're familiar with The Princess Bride, there's a line where Wesley, the Dread Pirate Roberts, says that he learned swordplay, fencing, fighting, pretty much anything anyone was willing to teach, he was willing to learn. That was me for many, many years. Partly because of my learning addiction, and also because of my fusion creative nature. We love to learn new things. We love to tackle new challenges, and we get good at a lot of stuff. So my role models were in the how-to section of the library. When social media became a thing, I started following some of those folks online and started having conversations where I could. I wouldn't say that all my role models are my friends now, but some of them know who I am, and some of them have become colleagues, and a couple have become friends. It takes effort, and I'm sure that's no surprise to you. It's a kind word when you see them speak, or even sharing their content with your audience when they say something that resonates with you. You'd be surprised how far a gesture like that can take you. It won't always move the needle, so I don't recommend doing it just for that sake. Be sincere in your effort to make connections with your role models. Most of them will be flattered and honored. I know I am. When someone says something kind to me about how they liked an episode or they appreciated a post I wrote, it always helps affirm that I'm doing the right work. I'm in the right place. In that moment, you've just become my cheerleader. So there's always a place to start here. If you're seeing gaps in your support network, think about who you'd like to help fill that gap and start building that relationship. Start building those relationships now. Your life will be a whole lot richer in the process. Beyond your people support, though, you've got to have some environmental support. One of the biggest fights my ex-husband and I had was about an office door. We had two children in the house, and I was working from home. I wanted an office with a door that locked. I needed a private space to do my client work. And let's be honest here, being able to lock the door meant I had a place to get away for a few minutes when I needed to decompress. My ex-husband just could not understand the value. He didn't think it was necessary. Why did we need to buy a door that locked when I had a perfectly good space to do my work? Well, he had his office in the basement, and there was a door on the basement, and the kids weren't allowed to go down there unless it was an emergency. So of course he didn't understand the need, and there was little I could do to explain it to him. So rather than argue about it, I moved my office upstairs into what was the TV room because it had a door that I could lock. Not long afterward, he decided we needed to move. And we settled on a rental in a new town until we could find a place to buy. And it was almost comical because, again, he got a room in the basement with a door that locked. And again, I was in an open area in the house. And this time, there was no option for an office because it was a smaller house. So finally, when we were ready to buy a house, I made it clear that I absolutely had to have an office with a door that locked. The house we bought had no basement. So he put his desk in the dining area and I took the third bedroom. And it didn't take long for him to finally understand the importance of having a private space away from curious little hands. Your environment is critical. It can be virtual or physical, in your home or away. For me, a room with a door that locked was how I created sacred space for myself. I had to learn to evolve and adjust when that wasn't possible, but even now, I much prefer the sanctity and privacy of a room with a door that locks. Even if you just have a teeny, teeny little space, you need somewhere that empowers you, a place, a space that fills you up. I call it a sacred space, my sacred money space or my sacred workspace. Size is irrelevant. It's just important that you have it. I knew someone who had a scrapbook and another who had a zipper baggie in her glove box. They'd sit on their couch or in their car and crack open these sacred spaces, holding onto the trinkets or photos or whatever that held meaning for them and help them hold their focus on what really mattered. The portable nature of their sacred space meant that they could be flexible and go wherever they needed to go and still be okay. These were their sacred spaces, their environments of empowerment for keeping them motivated and inspired to do what really mattered to them. Now we have online communities that are dedicated to almost everything under the sun. And with sites like meetup.com and other live events like my annual Creative Freedom Live event, you've also got in-person options for finding or creating an environment that will keep you motivated and inspired. Think of it this way. Your environment is like the soil in which you are planting your dreams. The more fertile, the better. Can you grow a plant on stony ground? Sometimes, but it takes a lot more effort, a lot more water, and a lot more patience. There's a rock out west that has a tree growing out of it. Back in the railroad days, train tracks ran on either side of that boulder. And the train engineers would throw a bucket of water on the rock to keep the little sapling hydrated. Lucky for the sapling, it managed to take root, find a crack in the rock, and keep growing. And now it's this funky-looking bonsai tree coming out of a rock in the middle of the freeway. It's crazy. So yeah, stony ground can provide you what you need to grow, but you'll need a lot of luck and help from external sources. The more fertile your environment, the easier it is to grow your dreams and bring them to fruition. So what can you do right now today to make your environment a little bit more fertile for yourself? Can you hang an inspiring picture or carve out a quiet corner in your place to read or do your great work? I turned a bedroom into a video studio, but before that, I just filmed in my office. And before that, I just filmed in my dining room. And before that, I just filmed wherever I had enough light and quiet. You get to evolve your environment as you evolve. I'm about to downsize in a major way because I'm giving up the lease on my 3-bedroom apartment, and I'm not even sure where I'm going to end up yet. That makes it even more important to have some kind of an environment that empowers me. And that's my A Club right now. That's the place I go to fertilize the soil of my dreams. And truth be told, that's the whole reason I created A Club. Yes, I wanted to help clients, and a revenue stream is always nice. But ultimately, it was about knowing there was a safe space online where I could go and see people like me working on what really mattered to them. It inspires me to know that these folks are out there doing the work, facing the hard stuff, and being themselves in the process. Sometimes I think I get more out of A Club than my clients do. So here's your task for the week. Take a look at your gaps in your support matrix. To help you with that, in the member area, you will find a handy dandy document that you can download and start filling in to help you get some clarity on ways to fill the gaps. Not a member yet? Well, what are you waiting for? It's free. When you join, you'll get access to that document and the show transcripts and other bonuses that are only available to members of our Rising Tide. And so concludes this episode of the Creative Freedom Podcast. For you visual types, our next video drops in a couple of days. If you like it live, join us for our Q&A about this topic on my Facebook page at the end of the week. And if you liked this episode, you can help us make a bigger impact in the world when you subscribe, leave a review, and share us around with your friends. Next week, we'll discuss a particular kind of support, live events. There's a way to make in-person events work for you, and we're going to talk about that. So I hope you'll join us next time. Until then, for more inspiration and education to help you own your dreams without selling your soul, come see what's shaking over at lisarobinyoung.com. You know you want to.